Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Jones! Bowden!
He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match!
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. I look back at the second day's play from Lords in the first test, England-New Zealand, and I suppose, Simon, a much more normal day's cricket today. Well, it couldn't be any more abnormal than the first day. Only seven wickets falling today, three of England's and four of New Zealand's. We come to the stage now after day two, where I thought actually it was sort of in the balance mid-afternoon when England had taken four New Zealand wickets. They were only about 50 or 60 odd, so 50 in the lead. And then that partnership between Blundell and Darryl Mitchell has really taken the game very strongly in New Zealand's favour. A partnership of 180 unbroken, both men in the 90s, and a very strong position set up by New Zealand, which wasn't what looked likely in mid-afternoon, I guess.
Stand of 180. So New Zealand's lead is 227, still six wickets in hand. Both batters in the 90s overnight. I mean, one thing in England's favour tomorrow morning is they'll have the new ball. It's one over away. And also the possibility of a different sort of weather tomorrow as well. Chance of humid cloud cover tomorrow, thunderstorms overnight, rain overnight. So different batting conditions tomorrow. But New Zealand, it feels as if they've done a lot of damage to England's cause today. Fantastic partnership between Mitchell and Blundell. Pitch, you know, just seemed to flatten out today, and just sort of normal test cricket broke out, really. I suppose the sort of normal test cricket that we expected on this surface yesterday, when we didn't get it. And it's, to me, Yoz, it seems as though England really frittered away their opportunity in this game in that final session when they had that collapse of 5 for 8, when they looked totally in control of the game. It's amazing how a game can just turn round in the space of 24 hours.
Yeah, I completely agree. There was a great platform set by Crawley and Lees, 60-odd for no wicket. And, you know, contrast that with New Zealand being 47 for 7 in their first innings. So that was the point at which England could capitalise, and they lost their way. So we've talked about that a bit already yesterday. You know, probably Crawley's and Root's wickets were the key ones. And then after that, nobody made double figures, and you can't blame the tail really, but it did expose England's long tail, which I just don't think they can carry on with. New Zealand today, I think you said yesterday, they can't sort of sacrifice or succumb twice in the same test match, and you were right. They got stuck in today. You know, it's interesting actually, that, you know, there was an over It was about the 30th over. And, you know, we talked about these batting frailties and why do they occur. And it's partly lack of preparation. It's partly players coming from the IPL. Maybe it's partly lack of ability as well. It's also high-class bowling. There's a few factors in there. But there was a pivotal moment, I thought, at about 30 overs when Mitchell and Blunder were together. And Daryl Mitchell, who's come from the IPL, so he's been playing white ball cricket for, you know, 2 months or so. And there is a sort of inclination, if you've been playing white ball cricket, you've been practicing against the white ball for 2-3 months, there's an inclination to look to hit the ball all the time, hit it on the up. And he'd done some quite hard work in that sort of previous 10 overs when New Zealand had lost their third and fourth wickets. He'd sort of got stuck in and defended. And then he faced a couple of balls from Jimmy Anderson on a length, on a round off stump, good deliveries, not doing a huge amount. He went for two big woofing drives. Mm. It's almost as if his patience had elapsed in the 20s, having sort of survived about 40 balls. One of the woofs slid off the edge and flew just wide of fourth slip. The second one, two balls later, misplayed and missed, but it went through to the keeper. And I think then he almost, that was his sort of chancy bit. That was the bit that Crawley experienced and got out, and one or two other players as well. He kind of got through that, but partly by luck. And then it was, right, actually, we've got to play some test cricket here. We've got to get us really properly stuck in. And really, they've given no opportunities to England since.
Yeah, they haven't looked like taking wicking. It's a really good point, actually, about those strokes from Mitchell. They almost came from nowhere. They seem to come from nowhere. I wonder whether they were thinking, or Mitchell was thinking, you know, Anderson, he's really testing me here. And he looked at the way the lower order had played against Anderson the previous day. You know, one or two of the lower order players had taken him on and smacked him over the top. And he thought, well, this might be the way to go. And then he had a go twice, and he couldn't make anything of it, and so he thought, well, actually that's possibly not the way to go. And I've had some luck, and there was that one that was sliced in the air through the gully region. England didn't have a gully fielder in, it was just over the head of Bairstow, and he wasn't able to leap up and take it. And then you're right, I mean, just proper test cricket play from there, and England did not look like taking a wicket. Occasional ball beat the batman, not as much. And the pitch just seemed benign, the conditions seemed benign, and Mitchell and Blundell, the two 31-year-old right-handers for New Zealand, who've got, you know, reasonable test records. Mitchell's made a good start to his test career, he's averaging 14, he's in his 10th test match, and Blundell has got a couple of hundreds so far. They just looked really in control, and there was no threat from this England attack. And it was something actually we were talking about in our preview podcast, about, you know, does this England attack have consistently 20 wickets in it on good surfaces? You know, when there's nip, when there's something in the pitch, yeah, you can see this England attack causing some problems. But that's going to be the tough part for this England attack this summer and, you know, going forward. Where are the 20 wickets going to come from on good surfaces that you have in test match cricket? But, you know, that's the challenge for all sides, isn't it, to take 20 wickets on good surfaces, and not everyone's capable of doing it. But, you know, it is a real challenge. And, of course, you've got to add to that the batting frailties that we saw yesterday, and it all adds up to a long, hard slog ahead for this England team and the new hierarchy of this England team.
Mm. Yeah, I wonder how McCullum's been thinking, because he must have been cock-a-hoop yesterday lunchtime when New Zealand were reeling at sort of 39 for 6 or something, and now it's reality has sort of bit home very quickly after 2 days of being in charge of England. So what they lack with the ball, you know, this isn't sort of rocket science, is some extreme pace, which obviously is because the purveyors of that are injured, and spin. You know, you want a good spinner. Someone like a Graham Swan would apply pressure at one end in these situations and help the faster bowlers rotate, might take the odd wicket himself. England just haven't got that option. Parkinson, first test in rather kind of unusual, strange circumstances, certainly didn't let himself down, but you just look at his bowling, and I can quite see why he's successful in white ball cricket and even in county cricket, but I can't see him being successful in test cricket. He's too slow. His body buckles as he lets go of the ball, so that he's let go of the ball at even lower height than he already is, and he's not tall, and he doesn't spin it very much either, because his his hand position is beyond the vertical at about 11 o'clock, and that means he can't get his wrist into a perfect position to really spin the ball. He doesn't pivot in his torso either, so because of his sort of slightly front-on action. So, you know, he's accurate, but he's too slow, and I can't see him posing a big threat. I can't see him, unless he makes remedial, you know, major changes to his action and stands up more, sort of bowls over the top of his front leg rather than collapsing over his front leg. I just can't see him being a threat.
So what do you say to people who say, well, this is only a second day pitch and, you know, you want to see him bowl on the fourth and fifth day?
No, I guess you concede that there isn't much in the pitch for him, but you're looking at the way batsmen handle him, and they're really getting down the wicket to him with a lot of ease and milking him for runs. And I think the thing that worries me most is that he doesn't get any bounce because his action is low and because he's not tall anyway, and he's also more of a sort of, I was going to say top spin bowler, you know, he doesn't get really massive amounts of overspin because of his action, therefore he's not getting a huge amount of bounce. And when players defend him, they're almost having to go lower to repel the ball, whereas a really good spinner would mean making the ball bounce into the splice. Think of somebody like Nathan Lyon, for instance, who gets a lot of overspin and he gets that bounce, which means that batsmen are kind of almost fending it off slightly. And that spin, with a spinner, bounce is almost as important, if not more important, than spin.
So are we seeing, or have we seen today, he's bowled 14 overs, no maidens, no wicket for 43, milked. He hasn't bowled lots of rubbish. I mean, sometimes you see leg spinners come out and they bowl, you know, full bungers and half pitches and that sort of stuff. I mean, he's sort of steady but unthreatening. Have we seen today the reason why England haven't picked him until now? And their hand was forced, really, wasn't it, by, you know, Jack Leach going out of the match, and they went with him. He was sort of the next in line, wasn't he? You'd think, in terms of the pecking order, the spinning pecking order. So they sort of went with that. But you've seen today why they haven't picked him in Test cricket beforehand. I mean, there's been a lot of people saying, you've got to play. You see social media clips of him playing in the Championship. And, you know, there was one, I think, in April where, you know, he did bowl a sort of worn ball of the century, didn't it? It pitched in the rough outside the right-hander's leg stump, spun across him and hit the top of off stump. But, you know, at this level, it's a very different game, and you have to do lots of different things at this level to be successful.
Yeah, I think we are seeing why they haven't picked him before. If you chat to players on the county circuit, as I did yesterday and today, they will say that actually Matt Parkinson's brother, Callum, is actually a better bowler. He's a left-arm spinner. The thing is, I mean, there's a sort of romanticism about leg spin, isn't there? And
yeah,
obviously that was begun with Shane Warne and continued with Anil Kumble and Mushtaq Ahmed and various others, Yasir Shah and people like that. You know, they do really spin the ball with a lot of momentum. I mean, Shane Warne, you know, probably the greatest bowler has ever been, but the others were no mugs either. And the things they had were speed, deception, and particularly, they, apart from Yasir Shah, and actually to a lesser extent Kumble, who was more of a seamer in a way, he was a very quick leg spinner who didn't spin the ball massively. But what they all had was a sort of momentum in their delivery. And in the case of certainly Warne and Mushtaq Ahmed, and, you know, before them Abdul Qadir, the wrist, the ball almost points to the ground as they let go of the ball, because their wrist is from, their arm is from sort of 1 o'clock, and therefore they're able to get the wrist sort of inverted so that they can really get side spin on the ball. Whereas with Parkinson, the ball is more facing the batsman, or the palm of the hand is almost more facing the batsman. He can't get the same revolutions on the ball because of his action. So, I'm glad that he had a go, because in a way you never know until he does, and perhaps tomorrow he might, you know, get a couple to really turn. But I think unless he does some major changes in action, I just can't see him being a threat in Test cricket.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
What about England's batting this morning? They had three wickets left. They were 116 for seven. A lot of the damage was done yesterday evening in that collapse where you felt wickets were frittered away. It wasn't as if the bowlers got the batters out. It was, I know you could say, well, it's often batsman error, but you know, I suppose it is. It's wickets when batsmen are playing attacking shots, or when batsmen are playing defensive shots, and there were a lot of attacking shots in that England innings, which led to their downfall. And then this morning, there were a few shots played, and actually Parkinson and Anderson put on, you know, there's a little flurry there at the end, got England ahead. But you know, Ben Foulkes seemed like a really tame dismissal. Stuart Ball had a huge waft and was bowled by Southie for nine. I know a lot of the damage was done last night, and it's a good point actually about England's tail, isn't it? If you got someone like Matthew Potts in at eight, who you know doesn't even bat eight for Durham, it is a pretty thin batting order. And you know, Jimmy Anderson bumped up the order to number 10 for the first time in a long while at the age of 39. It's a thin tail, and Foulkes has got to produce, hasn't he, as wicketkeeper. A batter, and a good catch today, but it just felt like a really tame dismissal. You just need to show a bit more, I think, on a morning like this morning. You'll take control a bit. I know you're trying to bat with a tail. I know it's not easy because you might play in a different, slightly different way because you're conscious of what is not left at the other end, if you know what I mean. But I don't know. It just looked another ordinary dismissal, really.
I mean, the thing is, his game is not one to farm the strike and play cavalier shots and, you know, go down the wicket to the seamers and, you know, play outrageously sort of expansive game. That is a Bairstow or a Butler. And the Foulkes is a more orthodox sort of player. So I think I heard Michael Vaughan suggesting on radio today that maybe he should bat higher up the order and Bairstow should bat at seven. I think England do have to be creative with their batting order a bit. You know, it's all very well to say, well, you know, he bats at number one for his county, so he should bat number one for England, but or whatever. But I don't know. I think sometimes you have to be a bit more imaginative. England are going to lose early wickets. So perhaps they should put a couple of expendable people up. They've tried that, of course. They've tried, you know, Jason Roy and Alex Hales. Well, I mean, you know, it's funny, but I was telling someone today about Middlesex in the late 1980s, where we played at Uxbridge a few times, and the Uxbridge wicket for a couple of years was really sporty for the first 10 overs. When the ball was hard and new, it shot all over the place, lifted, seamed, kept low. It was a nightmare. And then after that, it just flattened out into an absolute belter. So we actually did, for a couple of seasons when we played at Uxbridge, we reversed the batting order. And I went in at number three and got, you know, shot out almost immediately. And we were like 10 for four. And then if you look up the records of a few games, we were 10 for four and then we were 300 for four because we'd sort of seen off that horrible pit period with a couple of sacrificial lambs, and then the proper players have come in and absolutely filled their boots. So I'm not suggesting England go quite to those radical lengths, but it does take some thinking about, you know, because you are against these classy faster bowlers equipped with a Duke's ball when a helpful pitch. You are going to lose early wickets unless you've got someone who's just going to get stuck in and virtually not play a shot, which I suppose is why they picked Alex Lees.
Well, I suppose the one counter to that is that yesterday England were 59 for no wicket. They were able to get away. They got to the 14th over and they hadn't lost a wicket, and it all unravelled from there. I mean, it seems to me it's just a long road forward for England. And that's it. You know, we said before that this series started, you know, there's going to be a step forward, two steps back, or two steps forward, then another step back, and it's not going to be consistent. This is not the England side of the earlier part of the 21st century, which was a really good side. Statistically, it's the worst England side in the 21st century, you know, going back to the late 80s and that period in the 90s when they lost 13 games out of 17. They have only won one game in 17, and you know, there have been quite a lot of changes, and there will be some more changes as well. What about England's pace bowling attack? You know, it's four pace bowlers. Potts, you know, taking six wickets in his first test, has had an excellent game so far. 19 overs, 2 for 50. Broad and Anderson steady, one wicket each. Ben Stokes, 8 overs, 1 maiden, no wicket for 43. Went to that short ploy, didn't he, in the afternoon when nothing was happening. He tried to bounce the Kiwi batters out with short balls, 3 men back on the leg side. That didn't work. They were swatting it away and playing nicely. You know, it comes back to that thing about this England attack, that there isn't that point of difference. There isn't that extra pace that can... a really discomfort about it.
No, that's true. But look, in the end, they've got to make more runs. You know, this bowling attack is a good bowling attack with a decent spinner as well, maybe. Without any runs on the ball to play with a lead of 10, they're powerless unless they can run through an opposition again in helpful conditions, which they threaten
to do. It's a good point.
But yeah, were nullified. I think they're a perfectly good attack if they can get 400 on the board, but they've hardly ever do. That has to be their objective. And by the way, looking ahead, I still think they can win this Test match. It's going to be tough. They are going to have to take a lot of quick wickets. But if the second new ball does a bit of a job and it's overcast tomorrow, I can see England could still chase 260, 270 on this pitch, which ironically is what they were set this time last year by New Zealand, and of course they refused to go for it. But I can sort of see a 250 target being attained, but only if they play like England haven't been playing recently.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. Actually, we're sort of talking as if the game's over in a strange way. New Zealand have 227 runs in the bank. They've still got six wickets left. We did mention that new ball, two players on 90. On the other side of the coin is they might not be looking at 250, 270. They might be looking at 350. There might be a bit of license to play down the order. The likes of de Grandhomme and Jameson and Southee and Bolt, whatever, they could tee off. If they get through the new ball tomorrow morning, and first things first, you've got two players. What a position to be in. I know it's something you've never been, situation you've never been in your career, yours, to be in the 90s overnight and sort of sleeping on it. You know, Mitchell comes back, three more.
Well, I've been hit for 90 overnight. Yeah, and bring up my 100 on the next day.
Mm. Yeah, Mitchell 97, 3 away, Blundell 10 away. Much better than being on Norton 7 or whatever overnight. You know, it's a great opportunity for those two players, and they forge an excellent partnership. But I mean, it could be a lot more. But I mean, I think that one of the factors tomorrow is we feel as though the conditions could change again. Benign batting conditions today, but tomorrow might be humid, whatever, or a strong breeze across the ground. Completely different sort of cricket day tomorrow for England when they do eventually get to bat, and how many is it going to be? But I mean, the pitch is not that bad. I mean, that's the point. And we've seen big scores in the fourth innings at Lords. Not so much recently, actually. There was a part of the early part of the 21st century where there's some really flat Lords pitches, and Australia scored 400 here in 2009 in the fourth innings when they were set over 500 to win. You know, there have been examples. I remember Ajit Agarkar got 100 in the fourth innings for India here in a Test match, but against this good New Zealand attack, England's batting lineup just a bit, just frail. I think just collectively frail. It's only going to need, it's going to need another 100 runs, and you think that is a pretty stiff target. Although there's bags of time left, there's no time pressure, and also in terms of pitch, there's no great pitch deterioration because it would only be on the third day. So you're not talking about a fifth day pitch, but it feels as though it's stacked against England. But you're right. I mean, there are possibilities to win the game from here. But can this England side do it from this situation? You'd say odds against at the moment. But I mean, it's been a sort of up and down roller coaster, sort of unpredictable Test match so far. But
Well, yes. I mean, WinViz originally had England 65% likely to win, and now it's completely the other way. It's more New Zealand probably 80% now, even maybe 90% really, as long as they don't collapse. They get a lead of 300, say 250 to 300, they should be safe. But there's just a kind tiny little sliver of hope for England. But I think the likelihood is that the New Zealanders will shut that out fairly promptly in the morning.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, if the conditions are good for bowling tomorrow for England, then they're likely to be quite good conditions for bowling for New Zealand as well. I mean, you know, that's the way of it, isn't it? It might just revert to being a bowling day tomorrow. The weather is that sort of unpredictable factor. I mean, there is going to be some rain around, but I think the forecast suggests actually we are going to get more play than seemed likely, say, on Thursday. It looked like sort of quite a horrible weekend, but it looks as though the rain might miss the hours of play in the Test match. So, yeah, at one stage you were thinking possibly a two-day game. Now you're saying, well, in 4 days, but a tough road ahead for England.
Well, I'm hoping, having put all the bunting up in my street, that rain does stay away and we have our street party and we'll have a screen on in a little awning watching the Test match at the same time. I'm sure lots of other people will be as well. Maybe you could send us your plans on Twitter, either at Simon, either at cricket_man or at The Analyst. You can tell us where you're going to be watching the Test match from, given it's sort of street party day tomorrow. Look forward to hearing from you and look forward to reporting on a day when hopefully England can try and redress the balance tomorrow. For the meantime, thanks for listening.
Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky?
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.